Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills. Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
1850 715 815.
Good afternoon, I'm Jamie O'Reilly and this is Liveline. Yes, I'm sitting in here for Joe this afternoon for quite obvious reasons. He is, like many more, attending the funeral of his great pal, Gay Byrne, and naturally there remains an air of sadness in here in the Radio Centre today, and I'm conscious that it was indeed in this very studio, this very seat, that Gay Byrne lit up the airwaves every morning for many, many years, and for which he is so fondly remembered by so many people this week. And as his remains leave the Pro Cathedral in Dublin as we speak, in front of throngs of mourners, both of course inside the church but also lining the streets outside, we think of Gay Byrne and his family this afternoon. But as he probably would have said himself, the show must go on. 51551 is our text, and we have been discussing, and Joe has been discussing, the terrible trauma of bullying, the effects that it has on people, particularly on parents of young children that have found themselves at the receiving end of bullies in school. And indeed, we've been hearing from parents as well about how they've dealt with it. And we've been hearing as well stories from adults now who still are scarred by bullying in primary school and in secondary school many, many years ago. And we often wonder as well, what perpetrates it? What causes it? How do people become bullies, and what is going on in their own lives? And how now in adulthood do they feel as they remember back to how they made the lives of others a misery? Jason has contacted us. We have had so many calls this week, and we're going to continue with this discussion on the programme today to give people the opportunity to tell us their stories and maybe to help others that are listening deal with the issue, be they parents or be they themselves be victims of bullying. Jason, good afternoon to you, and thank you very much for making the call to Liveline. You're in your 40s now, I see from your call here. So you're remembering back to a time when you were in school, what, maybe back in the 80s, 90s?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, in the 80s, I would have been in primary school, and in the 90s, yeah, for Leaving Cert.
Right. And you've been listening to, you know, the harrowing discussions this week, which I suppose were prompted by the terrible story, of course, that we've been hearing about in relation to that beautiful young lady, Anna Creagel, young girl, and the trauma and the effect that that has had on everybody that knew her. And as I said, it's opened the floodgates to a lot of conversation on the programme this week. Give us, I suppose, a snapshot of the sort of life that you lived in school and how bullying affected you, Jason. Take your time.
I mean, yeah, I would say for me, I mean, obviously, I was listening to that lady yesterday, Aisling, as well, about her daughter, the 16-year-old girl that committed suicide about 2 months ago. And really, I was calling in about that and the whole kind of fact that I think that bullying at the heart of it all, and with Anna, there was a degree of, obviously, racism was the big issue combined there with the bullying. But for myself, yeah, I mean, I would have been bullied in primary right through to Leaving Cert. And it just became my norm. Like, every day, it obviously affected me at the time, and to this day I do still obviously think about it and the way it kind of shaped my life. But it became normal to me to have verbal, every single day it was verbal name calling, from primary right through to Leaving Cert. And I am today openly a gay man, and I have a wonderful partner and stuff. But I guess when I was a young, you know, kid in primary school, I always felt different. But it was never discussed. I certainly didn't discuss it. And right through to Leaving Cert, I didn't discuss it with anyone or my family. But it was there. And I was targeted for that. I was saying to one of the researchers there earlier on, I feel like it's children have a degree to almost sniff the difference from somebody, you know, whether that's being sexuality or looks or weight or whatever it might be, they just seem to sniff it off somebody and they're able to target somebody and exploit that, you know.
You were a young boy in primary school, so this began when you were 8, 9, 10, 11 years of age.
Yeah.
You say now you're openly gay now, but obviously back then you weren't, I presume, openly gay. But was this why do you think you were being picked on at that stage?
Because I think if you're anyway different, if you are sensitive or maybe perceived as sensitive or perhaps timid. Now, I wouldn't have considered myself timid, but I definitely was sensitive. And I would have, you know, my report cards would have always said that I was a gentleman, that kind of thing. I got on very well in school in the sense of with my teachers, and I always did my best, my ability to go in and learn every day. But you have those other boys. When I went to an all-boy Christian school, you know, they just pick up on it. If you're not as boisterous or, you know, rough and tumble, and if that's not your thing or you're not into sports, then that's all immediately targeted and identified by bullies and picked on. And essentially that is what happened to me. And it went from there with name calling. That went right the way through. I am tall. I was tall, obviously, as I developed through primary and secondary school. And I think being tall helped me because I didn't really have anyone physically attacking me for that reason. But I witnessed it with other guys who were beaten every day by bullies. And I had a few, you know, a couple of guys would push into me against in the corridor in secondary school, that kind of thing. And I was tough enough to push back. And I certainly gave back as well myself verbally if somebody was giving me, you know, verbal slack. But it was every single day, and it became my norm to have to psych myself up to defend myself. And, you know, from a very young age, when you're in primary school, when it's not, obviously it's not sexualized when you're so young, you don't know anything about being gay, especially in the 80s. You just knew that you were different. You knew that you had an attraction. And I do believe that a lot of people, probably the majority of people, do go through that phase in their life at some point where they are having attraction to their own sex. But for me, I was aware of that from a very young age. But as I say, it wasn't sexual because you're a child. But they pick up on all that, and your differences and your sensitivities and your creativity, any of that kind of stuff. And it's a target for them.
And Jason, how did you cope with this? Because you say that you were afraid, or for whatever reason, maybe it was, I suppose, a measure of the times we lived in then, that you clammed it up. You didn't speak to anybody about it for whatever reason. So how did you cope with this when you left school every day, walking home, going to sleep at night, getting up in the morning to face into it again?
I mean, I am a strong character, but so I do think, looking back, ultimately, I did cope quite well with it. That's not to say I wasn't under a lot of stress at the time as well, because I was, and I was under a lot of fear as well. There was one or two particular bullies who, you know, I was definitely fearful, and I went out of my way to avoid them at every possibility. So it was very tough. It wasn't easy. And I went through all of my school years like that, and it was absolutely very, very tough. I feel like I only had a very small band of friends, possibly as a result of it, because the degree of you was afraid to branch out and make more friends, and then also you have the control of the bullies, and so other guys wouldn't want to be friends with the subject of that abuse. So yeah, I mean, I still am best friends with those people who are my closest friends at school, and it's a small bunch, but it was tough, very, very tough. Yeah. And I didn't speak to anyone about it. It was the 80s, nobody talked about anything. And I certainly didn't tell my parents, and I would have considered my parents to be a bit old school. You know, it was kind of get up and get on with it. And I still have adopted that attitude to this day myself. But that's not to say that it's easy, or, you know, it's not easy.
Yeah. And did you ever come across the guys that bullied you later in life?
Years later, in my kind of early 20s, I met one of them. And he did apologise to me, which was nice. I met him in a bar out and about, and he did say sorry to me and shook my hand and said he was sorry for all the grief that they had given me throughout the years and all the name-calling and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that was nice. He quite young, he'd become a father himself. So his life was very different to mine. And at the time, I remember I was going off travelling, And he wasn't going off traveling, and he kind of said to me, oh God, I wish I could do that too. And so I kind of realized, you know, like at the end of the day, I'm the one living a better life or happier life. I felt like, you know, the perception of the game was that he was stuck in his life now, and maybe he was thinking about things differently, that he had his own children. And he did apologize to me. So that was nice. And I did accept his apology, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. As I said at the beginning, people like that, how do they now in adulthood feel if they remember back to what they did to their classmates? Did they, or do they realize what, you know, the effect that it had? Or did they realize what they were doing at the time? Is it a symptom of youth that they thought it was just hijinks and that the effects weren't so profound? I'd be interested to hear that. 51551, Jason, stay with me. Mary is on the line. Good afternoon to you, Mary. Thanks for contacting us.
You're
speaking to us now from the aspect of teaching. You're a former teacher, is that right?
That's correct. I'm a retired teacher. And listening to Jason there, he could very well be the young boy I rang in about if he were a few years younger. And all he has said, I think, would be very, very similar to what happened with the young chap I was dealing with. Now, I'd have to preface it by saying I was working with a very good team of teachers and an excellent principal in the school who was on the ball when it came to noticing what was going on in the playground.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were a primary school teacher.
That's correct.
And you contacted us, as you say, about a young boy that you had in your class, 11
That's
years
correct.
Of age. And take us through what you noticed and explain.
He was an introverted child, very quiet, very gentle. In that way, he attracted the attention of, let's say, the more streetwise kids. And so he was having problems, and his mum came to us. There was problems at home. Because he was quiet and gentle, then I think the anger would build up in him, and then he would lash out. Mm. And his mum was very concerned. We contacted the health board at the time. The HSE wasn't there. We spoke to social workers. We were, you know, generally fobbed off. Oh, yeah, we'll put him on a waiting list. And things were getting worse. His mum was coming in to me quite regularly, very concerned. We were concerned. We tried to advise the mother at the time, because while the school can do all it possibly can in school hours, there's not a lot you can do outside. School hours.
But Mary, just take me back to your own observation of this boy. What did you notice, or what did you see going on that was cause for alarm with you?
Well, I didn't see publicly. I mean, in the playground, we watched carefully. We were aware that he was a gentle child. We were aware that he was the type of child that was likely to be bullied. And we were aware, because we were in contact with his mom, that he was being bullied. We advised her, don't let him into school until the bell rings. Be there to pick him up so that he's not being bullied on the way home. Again, there were no mobile phones, no internet then. Mm. So we felt once he went home, he was safe. But even so, things were happening. You know, you can't be watching every minute of every day. And he was being bullied. And what was happening then was he was lashing out. And he was lashing out in anger at his siblings at home.
Why was he being singled out, Mary? You say he was gentle. Was there more to it than that?
Well, I think if I were to meet him now, he could be Jason. That's there. Mm. I'm fairly sure he was a young gay boy. But at the time, as Jason said, he didn't know what he was. He just felt a bit different.
Yeah. He's only 11.
I think there may have been... I wasn't aware that his dad was around. So again, that was possibly a problem.
Yeah.
But it was coming up to Christmas time, and his mum was very anxious about him. The school was anxious about him. And eventually I asked to speak to somebody senior to the social workers we were trying to deal with. And I spoke to a senior person and they said, oh, we'll put him on a waiting list, he'll be seen. And, you know, my reason for sending in the text was that nothing seems to have changed. In all those years, nothing seems to have changed. But I spoke to this person and they said, oh, we'll put him on a waiting list. And I said, okay, but we now here in school have done everything we possibly can for this child. If anything happens, you will be to blame. And, you know, we won't be quiet about it. We definitely have done everything we possibly can. And I was asked then, are you suggesting that this child is likely to commit suicide? And of course I wasn't. I said, I'm not suggesting that. I don't know. But I know he needs help very, very urgently.
What is the role or the responsibility, Mary, of a teacher if they notice that somebody is... I mean, were you going beyond the call of duty in looking out for this young boy? Or is there a code of practice there? Is there something in the teaching manual that you must observe or default to if you see bullying? Or is it just left up to individual schools and teachers to deal with this?
Back then, the codes of practice weren't actually, they were only being thought about.
Yeah.
They weren't there. But as a teacher, you have a responsibility to look for help for a child if you see they need it and it's help you cannot give. I think any school has that responsibility.
And is there a grey area in actually confronting the perpetrators, the bullies? Is it as easy as calling them aside when you see them in action and warning them about their behaviour?
Well, of course, if it happens in the school grounds, in school time, then you can call them aside, you can keep them away from the child, you can make them stay in, but you have to supervise them at all times. But when it happens outside of school hours and outside of the school premises, your hands are reasonably tied.
Mm-hmm. And you were a mother yourself, so
that kind of
helped you in looking out for this boy or spotting, is that right?
Yes.
Did it help, Mary, as a parent?
Yes, it did. Yes, definitely. When you have your own children and you see your own children's problems and every child is different, you are aware of those kind of things in the classroom as well.
But did you spot any similarity between your own children and what they might have been going through in terms of when you spotted this boy in the class being isolated?
Yes, I did. As it happens, I have a gay son myself. So I suppose that made me more sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have to say, at the time, I didn't know I had a gay son. But I did see similarities.
Right, in hindsight. What became of that boy? You worried over that Christmas time. You were very concerned, as you say. You're retired now, but what do you think, because at 11 he was probably in 5th, 6th class, do you ever know,
I do know that he was seen before Christmas that year.
Okay.
You know, what? I suppose sometimes the person that shouts loudest gets heard, and we made it very clear that we would not accept responsibility if anything happened to the child or if he did something that was out of the ordinary over the period, that we were not responsible, we'd done all we could. And he was seen, and he did get help. Now, I haven't been in touch with him in the last number of years, but I sincerely hope he has made a good life and a happy life, and I haven't heard anything to the contrary.
This is going back, as you said, many years. Jason talks about this happening in the 1980s, and, you know, we have changed in this country in so many ways, socially, as you know, but you do get the impression that, of course, homophobia and racism, it's as alive and well today as it ever was, despite all the striving that we have as a society tried to make in terms of being more diverse, being more equal, being more caring, being more open, being more comforting for people that have problems. It is quite astonishing, Mary, that even today we are hearing from parents talking about their children being bullied. And in the case of that wonderful mother, Aisling, yesterday, talking about her dear Mia, and what she got went through to the point that she took her own life only 2 months ago.
It's horrifying. I think it's more, I think the homophobia is not quite as bad as it used to be, but I think the racism is the one that's topping the bill at the moment, and I think it's absolutely horrifying. And I'm sure schools are doing their very best. They have policies in place now, and I'm sure the vast majority of schools are trying very hard. But they need a lot more support. And, of course, we also have to remember that those, I would call them streetwise kids, they need help big time to stop them getting into that habit, you know. And I always found as a teacher that where you had the support of the parents, where the teachers and parents could work together, there was never problems with the children. But it's when the parents are not in a position to be support and that they work on the same team as such that the problems arise.
Jason, listening to Mary there and how, I suppose, lucky you could say that young boy, and we don't know what has ever became of him, but he had Mary there to look out for him. Were you so lucky?
I'm not aware of any particular teacher that stood out for me like Mary. And I agree with everything that Mary just said there as well about, you know, racism being top of the bill at the moment. I do believe homophobia is alive and well, but racism seems to be the more prevalent one at the moment. No, I wasn't as lucky as that boy because I didn't have the same watchful eye as Mary. And I didn't have anyone at all to talk to or turn to. But this is it. I mean, you know, my own father would have said homophobic things. That was just the norm in the 80s. It was so normal for it to be said everywhere you went and every, you know, any social gathering, anywhere at all that I might have been as a kid, I would have heard loads of homophobic stuff being said. So that in itself is also a form of bullying, you know, and not just from children, but adults would have been saying it too. And I do believe that everything begins in the home in the sense of, you know, trying to prevent bullying to begin with. It all begins in the home. Schools can only do so much, but it's down to parents to teach their children basic respect for other people and the differences that exist in this world, and to just have respect for people's uniqueness.
Yeah. I suppose we're veering into the territory now of the causes of bullying, if that's the right phrase, Mary. How do people become bullies? Is it something that is handed down through the generations, if I can be so crude in putting it like that? You would come across a situation where children are reared maybe in the same way that their parents, particularly maybe the father figure in their life, was probably lived his younger life. Or are there other, you know, is it a coping mechanism, I wonder, Mary, for people that maybe are not academically or physically, you know, strong?
I think, yes, it is a coping method, but I do think that it starts in the home. I think it can be nipped in the bud in the home. I mean, there are always some children who are bigger and stronger and, you know, they'll give you a nudge and it doesn't hurt, whereas a smaller child can give you a nudge. They'll give you a nudge and it does hurt, and a smaller child can give you one and you don't feel it. But I think that if the parents nip it in the bud, and if the parents themselves are prepared to listen to children rather than thumping them all the time, you know, that will affect the children. Children behave as they see adults behave.
Yeah. And Mary, by the way, you referred, and I don't want to delve any deeper than this, but with your own son, did he suffer any sort of mental or physical abuse? Because, as you say, he's gay now, but maybe at that stage he probably was at a difficult time of his life. Vulnerable.
He was bullied a bit in school, but thankfully he was able to talk about it.
Right, that's the key,
you know,
isn't
and
it?
I think that helps too. Yeah. I think it's a big help if a child can come home and talk about their worries.
Okay, 51551, stay there, Mary and Jason, and thanks for contacting us. And I see we have Antoinette on the line. Antoinette, I'm going to come to you now in a moment, but I just want to take a break. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Actually, Mary, we're getting lots of calls. Mary, I want to just say thank you, actually, for contacting us. I'm going to let you go. And Jason, I'm going to let you go too. But before I do, Jason, in your own case, and thank you indeed for having the courage to make the call and talk about something so difficult, even all these years later. But I am listening to you. And I'm conscious that there are people listening to you as well all over the country, particularly parents of children who are being bullied, and their parents are heartbroken. Many of them probably in tears now, hearing you, and other people like you that have been bullied. But the one thing that is coming across, Jason, is how strong you are, and that you have actually come through it. There is a way of actually coming through it. It's not the end, and it lasts for a short time. Did you find as you got older that people became more sensible and that you were less, I suppose, of a target?
Really, it was only when I left school, I would say, that that happened for me.
Right.
But I think just as the country evolved as well, then people around me and my family evolved and it got easier to talk about it eventually.
Mm.
But that's not to say I didn't have many a dark day, because I did. I had plenty of dark days, and those dark days did carry through right through to my adulthood. And even now, I still have times when I stop and consider, you know, where I am in my life and what the events that have shaped it, basically. But I have always made a conscious choice to be that stronger person. I did always say, you know, I'm going to be stronger and not let this beat me, you know. But it was very tough.
What would you say to parents? Because I'm conscious it's 2:15 and, you know, a lot of, obviously, schools are
yeah.
Children are in schools, and maybe there are some listening to us now as well that are identifying with a lot of what you're saying, probably a little bit older than that. But what would you say to parents in particular that are listening to us now, as I said, that are awaiting a son or daughter to walk in the door now from school, having been the subject of bullying?
I would say every parent knows their own child, and to watch the signs, but to not be afraid to have those conversations, not be afraid to have difficult conversations. I always say, I don't have children of my own, but I can imagine being a parent in the sense of that child is, you know, 50% of you and 50% of your husband, wife, whatever. So there's a piece of you there, you know, and you can identify yourself in them. So I would say, you know your child, speak to them, open up the dialogue, ask them the tough questions, ask them straight out, but in a, you know, secure environment, and let them know that you're there for them, that you love them, that you're listening, and that you will help them. And together, you're stronger. Don't let them suffer on their own. Mm.
And as I said, you've come through this without any of that sort of support in your youth. Jason, thank you for contacting us and sharing your story with us. And, you know, it probably, I hope, may help other people in similar situation to yourself to cope with what happened and realise that it's unfortunately a part of life for some people, but that you actually can come through. Thank you indeed for that. Have a good weekend.
Thank you very much,
Jason. Thank you to Mary as well for contacting us. Antoinette is on the line, 51551. Antoinette, good afternoon to you. Thank you for contacting us. You had to take your young son out of school. What happened?
I did. I had his siblings were, one was a year older and the other was a few years older as well. But my youngest son was diagnosed with autism and ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
And really from the word go in the school, it was a serious challenge for him. And as he got older and as his meltdowns and things like that started to get more, severe more, you know, a lot more often. It was basically the whole school would, not only his class, but they would point and laugh at him and call him horrible names like freak, psycho, weirdo. This is a little boy who had no control, and he was, apart from the, I mean, there was a good few times one child had an issue with very long nails throughout the, you know, and he used to come home with his cheeks torn off.
God. What age was he at this stage, Antoinette?
This is from junior infants now,
oh,
and I
God.
Removed him when he was in second class. And
even at that young age, he was singled out for being different.
He was singled out, yes, yeah. With the autism, it's more so social end of it with him. There's no learning difficulties. He's highly intelligent. But the ADHD is more prominent, so that exacerbates the autism. But he, just for instance there, when he was in first class, when I collected him, he got into the car and said, "Mammy, why am I a freak?" And I just said, "You are a beautiful boy." And I said, "Where did you hear that?" And he said, "One of the sixth class boys told him that he was a freak." And my daughter, actually, when she was in sixth class, the boys would go into her classroom and say, "Your psycho brother or your freak of a brother is out there on the ground eating grass," and they'd be laughing. And that would devastate her, you know. When I went into the school, obviously, I was in there a lot, constantly, and it was basically, well, we'll ask them and see what they have to say. And this thing that really got under my skin was, well, they said they didn't do that. They said they're not doing that. They are not going to admit to doing it. You know, he had physical bruises on himself. I used to have to drag him in kicking and screaming into the school, and my whole day was spent, my stomach was sick, and looking at the clock, waiting for him to come out. And, you know, also, the teachers would stand at the door of the school, and the parents would be at the wall, and I was hollered at practically every day because there was meltdowns, and it was, like, the majority of the time it was caused because of the isolation. He wasn't allowed play, and that was the best case scenario, that they wouldn't let him play. But he was being chased, he was being called names. And when I only lived about 100 yards from the school, so I used to take a trip around lunchtime and just walk on the public area just to have a look. And he was always on his own at the very bottom of the school area. And I addressed this with the teacher, and she said, "Oh, he loves his own company." And I said, "No child wants to stay, be on their own." And, you know, he was getting given out to and shouted at for having meltdowns. And these were reactions to what the kids were. But my daughter went through from juniors right through to sixth class. Not once did they ever discuss autism, Down syndrome, different race, different religion, bullying. There was nothing like that. I took my two boys out of the school, and the school I have them in now, at least once a month, I have to sign a sheet of paper and talk with them about, they discuss autism, they discuss non-verbal children, different races, different colour skin, different religions, and like, it's unbelievable the difference. But as well as that, when my son used to have meltdowns when I was hollered at to go down and talk, you know, about what happened during the day, I mean, the new school will call me when it happens. So there's none of this embarrassing, you know, come here till we tell you what's happened. But then he'd be waiting around, and then he'd get fractious and he'd end up having a meltdown. And to see the parents' reactions, and they knowing, you know, the majority of them did know that he had autism. And I just looked at them and said, no wonder their children are the way they are, because they are showing their children, well, this is appalling. You know, this child is freaking out and getting so.
So Antoinette, in the eyes of the teachers, and by extension then the pupils in the class and the parents, do you think that it was your son that was actually being pointed at as being the troublemaker?
Oh, well, yes, definitely, because he was having meltdowns. So then he was, you know, upsetting the class. I mean, there was.
How would those meltdowns manifest? I'm trying to get a picture, I suppose, of the situation in the class.
Yeah. He wasn't, with the majority of autism is such a large spectrum, but he can't, well, he's so much better now, he's like a different child, but he wasn't able to control his emotions. So he could kind of jump up and scream or, you know, get down under the table. There was one time he put his head in his bag in the school bag just to try and get away from them. There was one boy who was kind of pretending to be his friend, but he was actually the worst of it. He'd stick his pencil in his arm and, you know, it was absolutely horrendous.
He actually
used to say to me when he'd, you know, when I'd be bringing him to school or, you know, bringing him home, Mammy, I want to die.
Oh,
I want
God.
To die. Now, this was a 7 and 8 year old boy saying these things
no
to me,
way.
I want to die. And I actually went and made an appointment with the new principal of the school because the school had actually said to me, well, I was kind of overprotective and he was paranoid and I'm not doing him any favours because I'm telling him to stay away from those boys who hurt him. Whereas I should be better off letting him be with those boys. At least if he's with them, he's not on his own.
So you were being told off.
I sat there going, you're actually saying that I'd be better off letting him be the butt of their jokes, be the butt of their hurls. And, you know, so I went and I had a look at the new school. And the first thing I saw was, because there's a lot of autistic kids, there's a unit as well. One child had a meltdown and I was with the principal and the teachers and all, and they just followed him. And then at the end of it, they asked him, was he okay? And I said to the principal, you didn't give out to that child. She said, for having a meltdown? She said, he has no more control over his meltdowns than we do. And I said, oh my God, because my son gets, like, you know, he has to stand in the naughty corner and he has detention and things like that. And she said, that's like pouring petrol on a fire. She said, they really haven't a clue.
So you moved, he's in a different school now.
Yeah.
But you're painting a picture there of like two different worlds, that there isn't, a base policy across all primary schools in Ireland under the auspices of the Department of Education, that there is a policy that should be applied in relation to children that are being bullied, or in your case, in relation to children that are being bullied that have ADHD or autism or are in some way on the spectrum like that. So it's really chalk and cheese in terms of the
it's
school
like
policy.
It's like two different countries.
Yes.
And when you go into the school they're in now, there's signs up everywhere over playgrounds, the hall, inside the walls. Respect each other, respect everyone. It's this emphasis on respect. There's no ownership of games. If you want to play a certain game, you queue up. You don't ask the kids, because that was a big issue for actually my two older kids as well. Like, you know, there'd be days, well, you're not playing with us. This is my game.
And Antoinette, how is he doing now as a result of that change?
He is a different... He has so many friends. He had a birthday party last year and I can't remember how many, but they all came and he couldn't believe that he had friends coming to his birthday party.
And that's all down to school policy, you believe?
And this thing, as I said, my daughter went through 8 years of the other school. Not once did they discuss bullying.
Mm.
You know, as Jason said there, you know, discussing different people, different colour skin, different religion, different, you know, there was nothing.
And is that discussed in his new school?
I guess they discuss autism regularly because they have the unit. My son with autism now is in mainstream and he's flying it.
Okay.
But they discuss, they have like, you know, the Odd Socks Day for autism and they discuss it so regularly, but they discuss and they do, like, the parents have to sign sheets about different types of bullying, not just physical or name-calling, but exclusion.
Yeah.
So that all kids know and, you know, when I went to the principal of the old school and I told him that I was thinking on removing the boys, he told me to make an appointment to come in the following morning, and he was going to make sure that my son was never bullied. He was going to call in the parents. He was going to, he said, this is the end of it now. It's going to stop. And I was so happy because I was so nervous, you know, better the devil you know it than the devil you don't. And I thought back after, for the last 3 years, they have been saying to me that it's my son who's paranoid and I'm overprotective and it's not happening and the kids are saying they're not doing it.
Right.
So as it happened, when I went to collect him that Friday, he had the two cheeks torn off him again. He was bleeding. So
sure.
I caught his hand that day and we never looked back.
You never looked back. And making that decision to change the school was the right one. Stay with me, Antoinette.
Oh, my God.
515-51. James from Cork is on the line. Good afternoon, James. You're a bus driver. Go ahead.
I don't know if I'm talking to Joe. You sound the one that didn't get to catch it up.
No, it's
the phone.
Don't worry. It's Damien here for Joe today.
Oh,
James.
Yeah.
Same show. Go ahead.
Same show, yeah. Well, I experienced it there a few years ago when I was driving myself for a private operator and I dealt with the situation. I think I did very well because the same man told me that whatever you said, bus driver, it seems to stop.
So what happened? You spotted a boy being bullied. Is that right?
Well, that's what you're calling it today. I wouldn't know what to call it at that time. I just said that I was saying to myself that there seemed to be hassling this for now. Let's deal with the situation. So I just pulled the bus over to one side. It used to only happen in the evening. It used to only happen in the evening. You'd never see it happening in the morning. I suppose they were going to school and I suppose it would be in his mind that he might say to the teacher, but coming home, it seems to be happening on the journey home.
So you spotted this boy being consistently bullied and you had enough one day. Am I reading your story properly here?
It just seems that everybody was turning around and aiming to this man and I just said, let's pull in here now and stand up and turn around and see what would happen if I gave under this situation. So I just said, lads, I said, whatever's happening, I said, it has to stop. You seem to be calling this man names on a regular basis. It must stop, lads. Otherwise, lads, I said, I'm going further. And I wasn't going further because I had no way, I had nothing in my head what I was going to do. But the following morning, the young fella said to me, or the following evening, he said to me, there was no more. He said, whatever you said, bus driver, it seems to stop. And there wasn't any more on that bus. And he went, never.
Right. That's interesting because you basically got involved. You had enough yourself. Many of the rest of us would just turn a blind eye, not get involved, and let it continue.
And Joe, our demon, that's what's really happening too, because there's a lot of things a lot of people come to me with various problems, and it seems that it can be older people as well, but I'm just saying, going back to the bus, I'm glad I done it, and I wasn't long on that round.
Are you still driving the bus, James?
Yeah, I does a bit of it, time and time, from time to time, yeah.
And do you find yourself as a kind of a listening ear for...
I would be very alert. I would see things before it happened. That's how I'm very alert in that line. I'd be, yeah. If I'm put on duty, I would be very good at that.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, you know, are you seen by some people as that friendly face that they can confide in and maybe share their problems with?
I could send you one letter, but I'd have to get permission from these people. But people have wrote letters to me thanking me for helping them out when they were in a bad place. So it's not just the bus. But I learned from my own mistakes and I learned from doing things. And I think that day I done that man, maybe when you hear your program there yesterday and today, it seems that has gone beyond the joke, listening to the other people.
And James, when you say you learn from your own mistakes, can I ask you, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, I could keep the program going now for many hours, but I won't do so. I am very restricted as to what I'm going to say on this program, but maybe another time. Joe did say to me another time, maybe, but I've learned from my own mistakes. And that's how you can help out others. You can learn from your own things.
Okay, all right. Well,
I wrote it down here just in my hand for fear I would forget to say it. But I kind of say that the schools could be more helpful, that there should be a policy in the schools as well, that none of them should step out of line.
Yeah. Well, as I said, we're not going to discuss it now, but I was just, what I'm trying to get into is, I mean, did you do bad things to other people, or did you bully, or... when you say I'm going down the wrong road here. That's fine.
I never bullied anybody, but I was often bullied myself.
Okay, all right.
And I dealt with the situation there and then as well on my own grounds.
Right. Well, you sound like a good man anyway, James, and you helped one person there who thanked you, and maybe many more, but by simply calling out the bullies and telling them to stop.
If I will broadcast it on the radio live now, but if anyone wants to speak to me, the HSE or anybody, any authority person, maybe they might learn from what I went through.
Yeah. Talk to people about it.
That you're hitting down the road, that something did happen. Maybe you might send somebody on to me, because I was with lots of people and I've told them lots of stories.
All right. Well, look, we'll have a chat with you off air on it, James. But thanks indeed for getting in touch with us. And it is an important point that you make there, that it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be a teacher, an older brother, an aunt, an uncle, or a best friend or whatever. That in a situation, it could be somebody that you know that is a good listener that you can actually talk to. And Peter there intervened. Anyway, 51551, it was James there. I have Peter on the line. Good afternoon to you, Peter. You were bullied at school back when? How long ago was it now?
Hello, Damien. How are you?
Good. And yourself?
Thanks very much for taking the call. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I'd be going back probably to 82, 83, 84.
Mm-hmm.
In and around, but my memories was that my mother, Lord rest her, who passed away in 87, bought me, and I don't know, do you remember, Damien, the beautiful Casio digital watches?
Indeed I do, yeah. Much sought after back in the 80s.
Absolutely. And an individual came after it in the schoolyard, but I have to say one thing, that I won't go into too much detail, but I had to use physical violence and to stop that bullying, and it stopped, and it never came back to me. It never came back near me, because that watch meant so much more to me than anything that thing could ever do to me. And I call them a thing because that's what these bullies are, Damien. Yeah. And then recently, a friend of mine, when I say recently, a couple of years back, I'm not going to go into too much detail. A friend of mine said his son was being bullied. And he asked for my help. So when I say help, he probably reached out to me, Damien. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, what do I do here? So I went down to see the chap. His dad was bullying, right? And then I called to see the bully's dad. And I brought him down and I knocked on the bully's dad's door. And I brought him down to the end of his driveway and I had a chat with him. And I just said, do you realize what your son is doing to my friend's son? He didn't have a clue.
Right.
He didn't even know.
What was his reaction?
His reaction, his face went pale, Damien. His face went pale. And forgive the expression, it was like he was going to vomit because he didn't even think his son could do that. So I just want people and listeners to know that it's not always children who are bullied that go through this and that bully. You know what I mean? That poor man, God help him.
Yeah. Well, you know, as all parents, me included, what is as bad almost, and I don't want to almost compare them, but to find out that your child is being bullied I'm sure, heartbreaking. Absolutely heartbreaking. If you see your child coming home crying or not wanting to go to school, it must be absolutely devastating, and I can't imagine how. But at the same time, equally as bad is probably to get a knock on the door to say that your son or daughter is a bully. And I'm sure for a lot of parents as well, that is something that...
And that's, There's the 360, Damien.
Yeah.
There's the 360.
And what was the upshot of it all? Did the bullying stop as a result of your intervention?
No, it stopped completely.
Did it?
Immediately.
Right.
Absolutely.
Because it was brought to the parents' attention.
Absolutely.
Right.
And that was a friend of mine that I had to bring that attention to.
Yes.
To that house. Is it the
I'll let you continue, but I'm just wondering on that, is that the right thing, the right course of action? Is it the only course of action? Would you advise other parents to do that, or should they go through other channels first, such as speaking with the school or reporting it to the Gardaí or whatever?
Well, Damien, I've listened to the show with Joe the last few days, and I know he's tied up today, and obviously God bless Gay Bourne and the whole lot, and may he rest in peace, and that's a given. But what I will say, Damien, is my own opinion, I have a 16-year-old son, and in my opinion, he was never bullied, thank God, nor would he ever bully any child in his life, and never did, because that's the way we were all brought up, right? But my opinion is, if you go through all the proper channels, and you must, and I think that's right and correct, so you go through the school, then you go through the Gardaí, if that doesn't work, I think a knock on somebody's door doesn't hurt. Because you must remember, Damien, please, and forgive me, sorry, I didn't mean to stop you talking there, sorry. You must remember that I'm 47 now, right? So in my day, if I was bullied, which I was, and I stopped it very, very quickly, school finished at 20 to 4. But the problem now is with children, it goes on all day with social media. And that is the problem.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a different era indeed. Stay with me there. I've another ad break to take, and there's more calls coming in on this. Antoinette, stay there. There's a couple of people who want to chat to you as well.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Peter, I'll let you go after this question, but you fought fire with fire as such, in that you stood up to the bullies who wanted to steal the watch that your beloved mother had given to you. And you say there you have a 16-year-old. And I think listening to the calls this week, you know, it's a no-brainer that we need to talk to our children about the issue of bullying, whether they're being bullied or not, but at least sow the seeds early in terms of telling them the rights and wrongs and how to deal with it. Would your advice to your children or to your son years ago, if he had come home and said he was being bullied, would it have been to fight back? Is that the way to deal with it?
Sorry, Damien. Sorry, it's Peter here.
Peter, sorry, yes. Damien. Sorry, Peter, yeah.
I have a 16-year-old son who thankfully was never bullied, thank God, you know?
Yeah.
And as I said, and I need to reiterate this, I feel so, so sorry for all the poor people who have been, you know, and the poor parents who are fighting that. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
Yes.
The only advice that I could give is what I gave to my friend when he came to me, and if the Gardaí can't help, and I have huge respect for the Gardaí, and I have huge respect for schools, but they can only do so much.
Yeah.
But if you're not getting any help there, Damien, there's only one course of action to take, in my belief, is to find out where the bully lives, knock on the door, and talk to the parent. And again, Damien, and I mean this sincerely, you would be amazed how many times the parents have no idea what's going on.
Mm-hmm. All right, Robert is there. Robert, good afternoon to you. Thanks for holding. Peter, thank you very much indeed for your call, and good afternoon to you. Robert.
Good afternoon, Damien.
Hi, you're around Peter's vintage, my own vintage. You're 48.
Yes, I would be, yeah.
Now, so you're going back over 30 years.
What happened to you?
I
was in primary school. I was a part of the soccer team, and we were quite successful. So I was very popular in primary school. But when I went to secondary school, then the soccer team was left behind, if you like. So I went to a different school.
Mm.
And I was quite a small young boy at 12, and second years, particular group of second years started picking on me. They'd use violence. They'd smack me around. They'd get me into corridors. They'd punch me in the stomach. They'd pull me hair.
Why, Robert? Why were they picking on you?
Because I reckon I was small. I was, I don't know, maybe I was popular, I don't know, in my year. Maybe there's something wrong with that bully, which is my other point, which maybe you need to reverse this as well. Is the people who are actually doing the bullying, are they being looked out for? Are they not getting hassled at home, maybe, and that's just mirroring out in reality in the schools?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's something to bear in mind as well. You really don't know what you're dealing with. So that last gentleman's advice was excellent. Go to the house, because you may unearth something yourself. But in my own personal case, yeah, I mean, I was verbally abused, which was the worst. As a young boy going 12, and you're suddenly in a mixed school, you'd be called derogatory terms. I won't say they're not so derogatory today, but they were back when I was growing up. It was through sport I got through it, because I joined again the soccer team, the indoor soccer team in the school, and I beat those bullies in front of the whole school and scored goals against them. And then I beat them in the rugby pitch as well, scoring twice, running up the blind side of them. And I was more popular. And as the years went by, I got bigger and I got taller and I grew and I managed to deal with it myself. And all I'd advise children out there today, they're surrounded by social media. It's not always by their own choice. They're just doing what everybody in school wants to be, unnoticed, or, you know, fit in with the crowd. So, you know, if you notice everybody today, they all have these little small eyes, pinky nose. It's trying to fit into a certain type of look. And if you're not in there, you can be picked on. And I think that's where I was. I was a certain look of a kid that I was picked on because I looked a certain way.
You came through it with sport, but the source of bullying for a lot of people is the fact that they're not sporty and they're timid in that regard. And you were lucky that you had that to fall back upon as a crutch to get you through. But the thing is, Robert, and you know, if there's good to come out of this week, and there, you know, we've heard some horrific stories on this program, and we just doesn't bear thinking about that poor mother Aisling yesterday, what she is going through as a result of her beautiful daughter Mia succumbing to it in the most dreadful way. But what we're hearing, though, from other people like yourself is that you know, sometimes they say a problem shared is a problem halved. And when you listen in and you hear that you're not alone, that there are so many people, and we're getting an avalanche of calls from people like you that were bullied but came through it. And sometimes what, as the old phrase, it's a bit crude, but what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And you are probably the stronger of having come through and been able to deal with it.
Yeah, well, I mean, the other thing was I surrounded myself with two good friends. I didn't want to be popular with everybody. I've got two good friends, and those two good friends are still my two good friends, 30-odd years. And those two good friends knew about the bullying, and they supported it. They were like bodyguards. So that's my other advice out to kids out there today. I mean, it may not be each sport, but definitely communicate with it, maybe with your best friend, and share it, and get them to help you.
Yeah.
Because two voices are better than one, and it's much more difficult to bully two people than one person. So try not to get isolated, and try not to maybe join a club inside the school, maybe join a chess group, join the reading society, whatever it is inside your school. Get yourself involved in something. Don't get yourself isolated. And it's so difficult today for kids, I can imagine. I have two twin boys, they're only 13 months, and I can see one of them is slighter than the other. And I can imagine he's very like me. And thank God I have a twin who's not like me. He's more like the mother.
Taking after the mammy. All right, Robert, we're going to leave it there. Thank you very much indeed. All right, have a good weekend. Thanks, Robert. Thanks for your call. And how you explaining how you dealt with being bullied all those years ago. Julianne is on the line. Good afternoon to you, Julianne. Your son?
Hi. It's regarding my son. I actually only heard the end of your radio program. I was in the car, and it brought back severe memories, to be honest with you. But
you were listening to you were listening to Antoinette talking about her son with ADHD.
Yeah,
she's still there, by the way. Antoinette, you're there.
Oh, is she?
Yes. Yeah,
so, I only heard the hi, Antoinette. I only heard the
How
end of your story, but as soon as I heard your story, I went, "Oh my God, that's me talking." My story is just, well, for me, I had to walk the walk in the dark, basically. Yeah. But it was one trauma after another since my son was young in school, and meltdowns. Now, it took me a couple of years being waitlisted to have him assessed, because the school were great, you know, with all these red flags that he would have in meltdowns. But for me to have him assessed properly, it was a long road. Now, he is diagnosed with ASD, highly functioning, and he has ADHD diagnosed a year ago. But it was back in the day, he actually had a meltdown in the playground, where it was the era of Pokemon cards. Children used to always taunt him because they knew if he had a meltdown, they would either get out of class and stuff like that. They knew when a meltdown would happen, the class would shut down and, you know, there'd be no class for the rest of the day. So his mannerism, it was frustration constantly. But these boys in the playground took his Pokemon cards, and he used to love going around. You know, the way there's always these eras of Pokemon cards, spinners and all that time. They took them and they ran off with them and they headlocked them. And in that, he had a reaction, a meltdown. He was 10, I think, at the time, or 9. And they ran around with his paw. He was chasing them. And eventually, in the meltdown, the boys then gone, "Oh, my God, he's really on the hammer." And the teacher caught the boys in the yard. But when they handed the cards over, the teacher says, "We're only messing." But in that moment, my son was so upset. And I remember he telling me, the teacher then turned to him, "I will give them back if you ask me nicely." And my son was in decibels of 10 in fighting for his frustration. But the teacher walked away with his cards. He couldn't come down from his meltdown.
Yeah.
And when she walked away, the special needs assistant wasn't to be seen near him. And when she turned her back, he chased him and hit her in the back. Now, my son was suspended from school when that happened. Now, at the time, I was a broken mother. I was going through a system trying to, you know, help my son get through his traumas. He was punched in the face in class and stuff. I became a very anxious mother. My confidence went really low when he got suspended. Yeah.
How is he now, Julianne?
I am very lucky. He's a teenager and
he's come through
it. He's come through it, but he refused to move into other schools in fear that this trauma would constantly be on his back.
Okay.
So where educationally he's not getting support, where he should be in a school where he would get all support. If you read me, but he had to avoid hurting himself. He suffers from anxiety now, and I actually became a broken mother. I had a breakdown myself.
Well, it sounds similar in a lot of ways to what Antoinette went through, and I think we might let both of you actually talk to each other, because I think you might be of some help to each other if you both want to. I'm not sure off the air, because I'm going to have to take a break now.
I would be delighted to talk to somebody. I never spoke to anyone ever about this.
Well, look, we're going to put
This is confidential stuff. I used to come home crying in tears, and I used to be so supportive of the school.
Yes.
And I used to always have sympathy. What it was is I would never like conflict. I'm not a conflictious person.
Well, Julianne, you have somebody to talk to now in Antoinette, and I'm going to let you both go. I need to go to an ad break, and we have more calls coming in this. But lovely to talk to you, Julianne. Good luck to your son. Antoinette, thank you as well, and good luck to your boy. And we'll put you in touch with each other off the air. Thank you.